Good morning. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Mike Gorell, and I am this morning's board rep. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. I ask that you check your order of service for the announcements that are there. In addition, we have a few others. Religious education classes begin today. If you haven't already done so, please register your child for RE classes at the registration table in the social hall after the service. If you have any questions about our RE program, please see Carrie Duma, our religious education director. If you are interested in taking a three-part chakra workshop that begins this Wednesday evening called Exploring the Chakras Through Movement, Sound, and Meditation, please find the registration forms on the table in the foyer and complete one today. There is still room for more participants. See Joanne Nelson with any questions. Lost and found items are on the table in the social hall today. Please check it out and see if any of them belong to you. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. Lori, good to see you. If you are visiting us today, the lively group. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitors table in the foyer if you haven't done so already. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church. Or if you have been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk with you. If you are visiting us with your children, it's our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to the religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right across the entryway. If there's any need for children, child care during the service. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we'd be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. Welcome. 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 It's a record. All right. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Conversation is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today is Lori Lobben. Reverend Lobben was ordained to the ministry in May 2010 by the congregation here at the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church, where she and her spouse, Tom, are charter members. She received her Master's of Divinity degree from Chicago's Theological Seminary and served her ministerial internship at Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Most recently, Lori served as the Acting Religious Education Program Coordinator at First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee, and she is now in search.
Good morning. Our call to worship this morning is adapted from words written by Annie Dillard and Kalidasa. Every day is a God. Each day is a God. And holiness holds forth in time. So look to this God this day, for it is life, the very life of life. Yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. Look well, therefore, to this day, this gift to us from all that is holy. And now we kindle flame in our chalice, an echo of the sun, the hearth fire, and the fire of the Spirit within us and around us, that it may brighten this day and illuminate our way. And I invite you to remain seated and join in the congregational response, which is printed in your order of service.
Thank you.
children of any age would like to come forward for the story for all ages. Hi, guys. Welcome back for another year of RE. I think that's so great. Well, today's story doesn't have any pictures. Sorry about that. But it is a story to think about. So you have to listen very carefully, and that goes for the adults, too. There are three people in this story. There's a minister, a mystic, and a scientist. Now, you know what a minister is, right? I'm a minister. Minister is someone who goes to a special school to learn about religion and faith and spirit. And most ministers serve churches. Some do other things, like visit people in hospitals or other institutions. Now, who has an idea what a mystic might be? Any idea? Yeah? A fortune teller. Maybe. Any other ideas? Grown-ups are welcome to guess who. Yeah? A psychic. Maybe. I'm not sure about that. Does it go to school and learn? Well, I bet they do when they're younger. Any of the adults have an idea? Too early on a Sunday morning. Okay. The dictionary I looked in said a mystic was someone who had or believed one could have special knowledge about mysteries that people don't ordinarily know. So maybe a psychic has knowledge about things that people don't know, or a fortune teller. But the kind of mystic that they were talking about is someone who knows about things that might be called divine or holy, or someone who believes that they can talk to God directly. And what about a scientist? I'm sure some people have. Yep. They do experiments. They do indeed. An archaeologist is a kind of scientist. A paleontologist is another kind of scientist. That's right. It's someone who studies or practices science or uses scientific methods to learn things. And usually those methods rely on what we call empirical evidence, the things that we can see and touch and smell and taste. So, here's the story. One day, a minister visited a mystic and asked him, "Does God exist?" Well, the mystic looked at the minister and said, "Allow me to meditate on this before I answer." So the mystic went to meditate, opening his mind and expanding his heart consciousness to embrace the totality of existence. And after a while, he returned and he said, "I do not know what you mean by the word God, but I do know that this world is more mysterious and more wonderful than I could ever imagine. And I know that you and I are part of something much, much larger than our own lives. Perhaps this something larger is what you're looking for." And so the minister said, "Well, that's not really much of an answer." And so he went to visit a scientist. And the minister asked the scientist the same question, "Does God exist?" And the scientist said, "Let me think about that and get back to you." And so the scientist thought. She thought about the vastness of the universe, 156 billion light years, or something like 936 billion trillion miles in diameter, and the almost immeasurable smallness of a quark, which is smaller than an atom. She thought of how the energy of the Big Bang fuels the beating of her own heart. And then she went back to the minister and she said, "I really don't know what you mean by the word God, but I do know that this world is more mysterious and more wonderful than I could ever imagine. And I know that you and I are part of something much, much larger than our own lives. And perhaps this something larger is what you're looking for. And so then the minister went off by herself, and she thought of what she knows and what she does not know. She thought about how she knows what she knows and how she knows she doesn't know what she doesn't know. And she thought about her experience of the world and how it is but one teeny tiny fraction of all experience. And she thought about how her life depended on forces larger than herself. And she thought about how everything that exists is connected. And she experienced wonder and mystery. And then she knew. She knew in her soul the truth of what the mystic and the scientist both said, that she is part of something much, much larger than her own life. And then, only then, did she think about what to call it. And that's the end of our story for today, and thank you for being such good listeners. And now I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 38, Morning Has Broken.
Now it's time for our offering. Freely have we received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly we bring to our church and its wide concerns a portion of our bounty.
Thank you.
It's not quite as pronounced as it used to be, but it's always amazing how the sanctuary just empties out when the kids go to Sunday school. I invite you to turn in your hymnals now to responsive reading number 531. And your part is the italicized part. This is from a piece called The Oversoul by Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was a Unitarian minister in the 19th century. Let us learn the revelation of all nature and thought, that the highest dwells within us, that the sources of nature are in our own minds. I am constrained every moment to acknowledge a higher origin for events than the will I call mine. Every moment when the individual feels invaded by it is memorable. The soul's health consists in the fullness of its reception. Within us is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty, to which every part and particle is equally related, the eternal one.
Now we've come to our special time of the service where we take a few minutes to share the joys and concerns that we've experienced over the past week or recently. And if you have a profound joy or a great sorrow that you'd like to share with us, please tell us your name and raise your hand and I'll light a candle for you. And our ushers will pass the microphone. So I'll start us off lighting our memorial candle for all of those who suffer from war, and even just this morning hearing, you know, more bombings in Baghdad, and we're always wishing and hoping and working towards a better way.
I'm Carlin Wagner. John, would you please light a candle of joy for Aislinn's, our daughter's, birthday? She was 17 this past Tuesday.
My name's Lynn Smith. A candle of joy for our daughter, May. As I speak, she's on a plane to Guatemala where she's going to become fluent in Spanish as she works at Safe Passage, which is a school for the kids who grow up in the garbage dump.
Sue Andrews, would you please write a candle of joy for our friends Mona and Sue, who were married in Winnipeg on September 4th. And for those of us who were there and shared in that, were privileged to share in that weekend of celebration. I know these aren't members of our community, but Linda reminds me that witnessing to love is always worthwhile.
Hi, I'm Pat. Patty, please light a candle of joy for my sister, who recently found out she's going to be a grandma.
Hi, my name is Kaz. Please light a candle for concern. I just heard on the news recently that there's 40 million Americans who are living under poverty level, which is poverty is defined as $20,000 or less for a family of four. So that brings the price down to tag of $5,000 a year. This is kind of unacceptable for a rich nation like ours, where GDP, gross domestic product per capita, is $41,000. So we can do better, I think.
I'm Anita. If you could light a candle of concern for my boss, her sister's going through chemo right now, and her father's been hospitalized.
And I'll light one last candle for the joys and concerns that we keep in our hearts today.
I invite you into a time of meditation, prayer. We'll begin with spoken words, have a time of silence after. So as we hold in our hearts all of the great joys and concerns and those that were unspoken, here is a prayer from the Reverend Sam Trumbore. Spirit of life and love, be present in our awareness as we turn inward to witness and feel you flowing through us. These days, the first sight of yellow, orange, and red frosting the top of trees and spilling down the sides. The advent of cooler mornings, soon to be cold enough to cloud the breath. The familiar sight of children waiting for yellow school buses and the annoyance of being stuck behind one in traffic remind us that fall begins this week as the sun crosses the equator headed south. Tree sap descends into the ground. Falling leaves, drained of life, are tossed by the wind, and bullfrog and bear alike prepare their winter resting places. This can be a time to honor the urge in us to hibernate, turning our attention from summer recreational activities and preparing a warm place for our own winter rest. So during this inward, turning, quiet time, let us go deeper, below the surface of our ordinary lives, and use that stillness for reflection and renewal, knowing that summer will return to us again, just long enough from now to feel as if we have been reborn. blessed be, and amen. I invite you to remain seated now and join in singing our centering hymn number 89, Come My Way, My Truth, My Life. Several readings before the sermon this morning, so I've asked John to help me with those.
Our first reading is from the book of Exodus, 33, verses 17 through 23. The Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing that you have asked, for you have found favor in my sight. And I know you by name. I will make all my goodness pass before you, and you will proclaim before the name the Lord. You will proclaim before you name the Lord, and I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. But, he said, you cannot see my face, for no one shall see me and live. And the Lord continued, See, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock, and while my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen.
And this is from the Bhagavad Gita. When Arjuna's request to see the true immortal self of the divine is granted. There, within the body of the God of gods, Arjuna saw all the manifold forms of the universe united as one. Filled with amazement, his hair standing on end in ecstasy, he bowed before the Lord with joined palms and spoke these words, O Lord, I see within your body all the gods and every kind of living creature. I see Brahma, the creator, seated on a lotus. I see the ancient sages and the celestial serpents. I see you everywhere, without beginning, middle, or end. For you are the Lord of all creation, and the cosmos is your body. You are the supreme, changeless reality, the one thing to be known. You are the refuge of all creation, the immortal spirit, the eternal guardian of eternal Dharma. The sun and moon are your eyes, and your mouth is fire. Your radiance warms the cosmos. and from 12th century mystic Hildegard von Bingen. I saw a vision so full of mystery it made me shiver. I grew numb from the wonder of it, and this drove my mind into a new dimension. Creation is mystery. The wind is made of air that stirs the sea, and condensation results, making rivers flow. And these rivers water the earth and give it vitality, just as a person's crisscrossing veins course through the body and strengthen it. The soul is made of air, like the wind, and helps each person do what's right. Just as airy breezes help fruit grow, the Holy Spirit is an air that floods a person's thoughts like a river, giving them wise discernment.
And our last reading is from Ursula Goodenow, and it's called The Sacred Depths of Nature. I have found a way to defeat the nihilism that lurks in the infinite and the infinitesimal. I have come to understand that I don't have to seek a point in any of it. Instead, I can see it as the locus of mystery. The mystery of why there is anything at all rather than nothing. The mystery of where the laws of physics came from. The mystery of why the universe seems so strange. Mystery, inherently pointless, inherently shrouded in its own absence of category. The clouds passing across the face of the deity in the stained glass images of heaven. Mystery generates wonder, and wonder generates awe. The gasp can terrify, or the gasp can emancipate. As I allow myself to experience cosmic and quantum mystery, I join the saints and the visionaries in their experience of what they called the divine. Here end the readings.
Thank you, John. Da. Da, da, da. For those of you who were wondering about the sermon title, in the science fiction movie classic 2001, A Space Odyssey, Dave Bowman is an astronaut who views what's inside an artifact orbiting Jupiter. And his last broadcast is the awestruck, "My God, it's full of stars," before he disappears into that artifact, which is a stargate to the rest of the universe. And that's about all I'm going to say about that movie. Sorry. Much is made in our faith of our seven principles, the covenant agreed to by our member congregations, which serves as an ethical guide and sometimes a challenge to those of us in the congregation. Some churches actually specify in their bylaws under membership requirements that one must be in sympathy with the principles. But our principles weren't just created out of thin air. They are grounded in sources, the often ignored second section of the covenant. If you want to, you can look at one of the hymnals, and about three pages before hymn number one, there's no page number, you see a page that has, "We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote," right up at the top. And below the principles, it says, "The living tradition we share draws from many sources." And we have six sources. Now, don't worry if your hymnal only has five. It just means it was printed... Not yet, Duke. Printed prior to the adoption of the sixth source in 1995, which tells you that this is a living document. It's not set in stone. In fact, 2 years ago at our General Assembly, there was a motion to, rewrite the principles. Not big changes, but just some changes in wording. Now, it's in our sources that we find the wisdom of the ages, or if not the wisdom of the ages, the finger that points at them. And it is in our sources that we can see how broad a scope this faith encompasses. And when I began to think about a sermon series on our sources, the quote from 2001, "My God, it's full of stars," seemed to accurately convey the spirit of our first source, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces that create and uphold life. Wow, that's a mouthful. That's even bigger than saying, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. So let's unpack it a little. What does transcending mystery and wonder mean? Well, being Unitarian Universalist, it probably means something different to each one of us. Although I know that many agree with poet Mary Oliver when she writes, "Mystery is God's other name." And transcendent implies that whatever this experience of mystery and wonder is, it somehow goes beyond or outside the ordinary. So let's go with that. And I'm sure we'll come back to it again and again. Now, what about direct experience? Now, this seems to imply an experience that is personal, not relayed secondhand from another. My experience is not John Kuhn's experience, is not Duke's experience, or anybody else's. And the source further tells us that this is affirmed in all cultures. And, yeah, our readings. We've got the Hebrew scriptures and the Bhagavad Gita from the Hindu scriptures and a biologist, Ursula Goodenow, all talking about mystery and wonder. And so, let's talk about mystery and mysticism. Many religions have a mystic tradition. As I said, our earlier readings came from the Hindu and Hebrew scriptures. And a 12th century Christian abbess. And in addition, some of you may be familiar with the poetry of 13th century Sufi devotee Jalaluddin Rumi, whose poetry often addresses the divine as his beloved, as when he wrote, "The wakened lover speaks directly to the beloved. You are the sky my spirit circles in, the love inside love, the resurrection place." Well, many of the Christian mystics also spoke of God in terms of divine love and ecstasy, particularly the women. I'm not sure why the women did that more than the men, but there it is. Because what was sought was not just an experience of the divine, but an experience of the divine love expressed in the Gospels. Now, Hildegard of Bingen, Julian of Norwich, Mathilde of Magdeburg, St. Clair of Assisi, and others were all devout religious women, nuns who were able to write about their visions and experiences of the divine. Now, where Mathilde's writing tends to the earthy and passionate, Hildegard reports and interprets visions that praise the holy in feminine and nature-based images. She frequently addresses God as O Mother, and repeatedly writes of the greening of the soul in imagery that we might associate with spring and fertility. For example, this hymn prayer addresses the divine in a unique way. Quote, "O leafy branch, standing in your nobility as the dawn breaks forth, rejoice and be glad and deign to set us frail ones free from evil habits and stretch forth your hand to lift us up." End quote. So all of these mystics referred to something beyond themselves that they were still somehow able to experience, often through visions or by somehow altering one's consciousness. And I say altering one's consciousness because that's what the Sufis do in their practice of zikr, the whirling dance of the dervishes, which induces a trance-like state of ecstasy in its practitioners. So they're looking beyond themselves to something outside themselves and really kind of outside the world, God. Skipping forward in time to the 19th century, the American Transcendental Movement emerged in New England, growing out of the philosophies of German idealism and English Romanticism. Now, in contrast to the mystics looking beyond and outward, the Transcendentalists looked inward, and their goal was to achieve an ideal spiritual state, or know the divine, through the use of one's own intuition and intellect, thereby transcending physical empirical experience. Although they often used that empirical experience, as in Ralph Waldo Emerson's classic essay on nature, it was the experience of nature filtered through one's intellect that produced a transcendental, beyond the ordinary, state of union with the divine for Emerson. As he wrote, "The lover of nature is he whose inward and outward senses are still truly adjusted to each other, who has retained the spirit of infancy even in the era of manhood. For in the woods is perpetual youth. There I feel that nothing can befall me in life, no disgrace, no calamity, which nature cannot repair. Standing on the bare ground, my head bathed by the blithe air and uplifted into infinite space, all egotism vanishes. I am nothing. I see all. The currents of the universal being circulate through me. I am part or particle of God." Yet it is certain that the power to produce this delight does not reside in nature, but in man, or in a harmony of both. End quote. Now, generations of poets have been influenced by the Transcendentalists, some of them particular favorites for Unitarian Universalist ministers who are looking for readings for services. Poets like Mary Oliver, E.E. Cummings, and Alice Walker. And most of you know that our Unitarian forebears were well represented in this transcendental movement, which also influenced the development of spirituality in America, having a great influence on the development of the Ethical Culture Society and the early New Thought movement. And it's Emerson once again who is credited with first bringing the Bhagavad Gita and Vedas to these shores. And his thinking was influenced by his reading of those ancient texts. Now, to take just a slight detour for a moment, as I was reading about the mystics and the transcendentalists, but particularly the mystics, I started thinking about the quality of experiences that they had several centuries ago. And as I said, this is really just kind of a sidebar, because I was thinking our current knowledge offers a lot of rational explanations for those who had visions. We know that some forms of epilepsy produce visions. We know that some mental illnesses resulting from a biochemical imbalance in the body can produce interesting visions and hearing voices. In fact, in seminary, one of my professors speculated at length on exactly which psychosis might have afflicted some of the biblical prophets. And let me be clear that I don't mean any disrespect to their experience, for many traditions promote the use of meditation and other means to be closer to the divine, and with only a few exceptions, I respect their beliefs and practices. But I am also mindful of our other principles and sources, particularly the admonition to heed our reason and the evidence of science. Now, at one time, I would have been able to feel a palpable shift in attention from the congregation at this point, for at one time there seemed to be two kinds of people in the world, the mystics and the scientists. And some religions still seem determined to discount science, and some scientists to discount religion. But if you were paying attention during the story of all ages, You know how alike the mystic and the scientist can be in their views of the universe. I believe we're fortunate to be living at a time when we know so much and have an idea how much we really don't know, and at a time when we have access to the lessons of so many gifted scientist, mystic teachers. I'm trying something different. We're going to see a clip that blends several teachers from different disciplines and music to kind of illustrate the mysticism of science and how mysterious and wonderful the universe is.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically, to the rest of the universe atomically.
I think nature's imagination is so much greater than man.
About all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space, millions. The sea of space, the stars, our other sun. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Thanks, Duke. Problem with technology is that it doesn't always work the way you want it to. And so we come to the current thinking on transcendence by way of science. Now, religious naturalism is one name for the philosophy which finds meaning and fulfillment without recourse to supernatural phenomena. And in this theology, the transcendent is defined as the sum of the worthy and constructively challenging aspects of the world. The term God can be used to symbolize the transcendent, although many religious naturalists prefer not to deify the natural world or universe. Beyond the ordinary here means looking at the ordinary, looking at what is, what really, really is, in all of its complexity and seeing the beauty. Now, one objection to resorting to this minimalist view of transcendence is the apparent pointlessness of life in the face of the fact of death. In other words, the greater the comprehension, the less meaning there seemed to be. And biologist Ursula Goodenow, in our earlier reading, offers one strategy for combating this problem. Accept that there may not be a point and call it mystery. Further, Goodenow points out that calling the mystery God doesn't work for her. She prefers to take in all the facts that are known, the vastness, the great numbers, the abstractions, and in the words of songwriter Iris Dement, let the mystery be. Now, I confess to my own fascination with the way of science. Like most of the population, I don't understand string theory or quantum mechanics, but I can comprehend the universe is vast and old and expanding rapidly with no end in sight. I can marvel at the way atoms are put together in infinite combinations to create flowers, dogs, people, dolphins, and so many other things that are elevated from the ordinary to the transcendent by thinking about their underlying complexity. And this, my friends, does indeed renew my spirit and moves me to work toward better stewardship of our planetary resources. And so, as I am awed by the mystery and wonder of the universe, I wonder. I wonder if, as the ancient writings say, none of us is really meant to view the divine in all its terrible glory. Moses was protected by God's hand. Arjuna could barely comprehend the vision of Vishnu in completeness. And the vision of mystery made Hildegard shiver. And if that is the case, I am also content with Ursula Goodenow to make a covenant with mystery and just let it be. Your mileage may vary. And I invite you now to rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 21 for the beauty of the earth.
Thank you.
The custom of this congregation is the polylog, which is an opportunity for the members of the congregation to offer their own reflections and comments on the theme of the day. If you have thoughts to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring a microphone to you. Please tell us your name so we can all get to know each other better and be mindful that this is still part of our worship service. In particular today, I'd be interested in hearing about your experiences of transcending mystery and wonder, if you care to share them. And I have to confess, this is such a big topic. I feel like Bill Nye in the video going, billions and billions of experiences out there, folks.
Hi. Excuse me. I'm Mike, holding a mic. there are two things I wanted to comment on And I'll connect that with my view of wonder and infinity. The first was the reading from Exodus. I like the fact that God had to hold his hand over Moses so that Moses couldn't see directly into his face, implying that the face is the source of mystery and infinity and power, if you will. And the other was your quote from 2001, "My God, it's full of stars." Our face is the place where we meet infinity in each other. One of the reasons I don't believe in God is not because I have an objection to religious beliefs, but rather that I find God unnecessary, because God is encountered in the face of the other person, of the living other person. And the eyes, of course, being the window to the soul. As you and I talk to each other and share, I realize that I'm encountering literally infinity, an infinity of space, because your universe is an infinite distance from mine. We never have access to anybody else's experience except our own. But through conversation and through worship like this and through our encounter with each other, both confronting and critiquing, criticizing, mentoring, if you will, but also in sharing and supporting. We meet that infinity, and that is where the real power and transcendence comes from, I think.
Wow. Thank you, Mike.
I stopped using the word God just recently, I guess, a couple of years ago, and I call it universe because I think in Japan, if you were Shinto and you use the word God, and we have the word God, which is we call it kami, but the Shinto believe that a God is everywhere, so it's not as synonymous with Western concept of God, which is a creator, that, you know, the only God. We have, if you are Shinto, there's a river God, there's a moon God, there is, you know, human God, I guess. And by reading some of the physics, quantum physics, where atom is not the smallest element, but what holds it together, which that was on the video, which is energy, and that it flows in everyone. And that, to me, correlates with what Shinto says about, you know, God is everywhere. So I start using the word universe just because when you say God, it's you have your own definition of God. So this is my sharing of God.
Thanks, Kaz. One of my Christian classmates from seminary actually calls the universe too. She'll say, "I'm just putting it out there to the universe."
Hi, my name's Mike. I see one of the uses of religion is to explain or come up with some explanation to all the mysteries within the universe and the world. So people, I feel, have a hard time comprehending that they can be the top intellect out there, and they want something to be greater than them that actually created and designed everything, whatever. So what I feel, at some point in time, man invented God, created God in order to have somebody else be some way to explain all these mysteries.
I would tend to agree with that. And now we have explanations for all kinds of things. And yet, there's still so much we don't know. And we may never know.
Hi, I'm Sonia. And you're right, this is such a huge topic. And everything that everyone said so far, I have this need to respond to. But what I'd like to respond to really is what Kaz said. And what's interesting to me is when I joined this church, I could not use the word God because of its Christian Western limitation, and because everybody meant it differently. And through the course of my growth in spirituality within this congregation and with all of you, I now can use the word God, and very comfortably knowing how I mean it. And even if I'm working with someone, those who don't know, I'm a psychotherapist, and for working with someone who means it in a Christian way, we can find connection in the word. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we mean it really that differently. So,
thanks, Sonia. And I have to say, my experience is somewhat the same. There were times when I couldn't say the word prayer or God. I'd say the G word. And now I can. And we only have time for maybe two more. So,
hi, my name is Laura. I'm a light energy worker, so the way I experience the universe and infinity and God and spirit, I use all those words at different times, but for me, more than an intellectual and a language thing, it's experiential. Mm-hmm. When I put my hands on someone, or I don't even have to touch them, I can kind of shift into a different dimension, if you will, a different... it's just moving over a little bit, and you join in this interconnective part of life where you really can blend with people and meld with people and feel that, you know, you're a part of them, they're a part of you, and we're a part of everything, and you can help them experience the same thing and get them in touch with their own inner wisdom, their own God, and feel their own light and connection with the universe, which helps people heal.
Thank you. Thank you. That's outside of my experience, but I'm interested in what you had to say.
My name is Jerry, and last fall we tried to have Michael Dowd come here with his talk of Thank God for Evolution and his ideas of the great story, which was that... that the universe is the known universe, so the universe is thought now to be 13 point something billion years old. And all of the matter was in the universe now is in the universe from the very start. So we're all 13 billion years old. So we're all part of this great universe that we exist in. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to come here because he became seriously ill and he's ceased his traveling ministry, but I just thought I'd share that. He seemed to have this idea of this transcendentalism, this transcendental idea of God and how we're all connected.
Yeah, Michael and his spouse, Connie Barlow, I think Michael's doing some traveling again, actually, because I heard he was in Peoria recently. He's a UCC minister, and she's a Unitarian Universalist, and a science writer. Fascinating ministry they have. Fascinating. Thank you all for your comments and your reflections, and I hope we get a chance to continue the conversation during coffee hour. Our closing words are from the Tao Te Ching. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the beginning of heaven and earth. the named is the mother of 10,000 things. Ever desireless, one can see the mystery. Ever desiring, one sees the manifestations. These two spring from the same source, but differ in name. This appears as darkness. Darkness within darkness, the gate to all mystery. Go in peace, go in joy, go in love.